Thank you, and you may be seated. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals on this snowy day. Hopefully you didn't have a hard time getting into court. And with that, will you call the first case, please?
First case this morning is A22-0776, resolution relating to the termination and non-renewal of the teaching contract of a probationary teacher.
And I know that you're familiar with the rules of court, but you can, there are three podiums. You can either use the one closest to your table or the middle one, which goes up and down. At the beginning of your oral argument, please state your name for the record. It's being recorded. The arguments will be posted on a website within a day or two. And you each will have 15 minutes with 5 minutes of rebuttal. So with that, are you ready to proceed, counsel? Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. I'm Deborah Korhouse, D-E-B-R-A-C-O-R-H-O-U-S-E, with Education Minnesota, representing Kellyanne Lockrum today. As you know from our briefing, this is a case of statutory interpretation, which is subject to de novo review. Our member, Ms. Lockrum, came to Respondent School District with 4 consecutive years working as a licensed school counselor in a Minnesota public school district. In that role, she was required to hold a valid license from the Minnesota Professional Educator Licensing and Standards Board, counsel Minnesota public school students, facilitate the administration of Minnesota state tests, ensure student rights to accommodation and special education, and ensure students were registered for the classes they needed to meet Minnesota state graduation standards. The only thing that separated her from other teachers with similar experience is that those 4 years of teaching were in a public charter school district. However, as the charter school law says, these districts are explicitly, and I quote, part of the state's system of public education, unquote. And that's from Minnesota Statutes 124E.03 Subdivision 1.
Well, therein lies the problem, because that same statute also specifically says that a charter school is exempt from all statutes and rules applicable to a school district unless the other statute or rule is made specifically applicable to the charter school. And isn't that the real issue before us? Because I don't see a specific reference to charter schools in the continuing contract statute. Can you help me out with that?
Absolutely, Your Honor. So that is absolutely true for a charter school. They do not give continuing contract. They do not give tenure. They are explicitly exempt from that statute. However, what we're here in front of you today is what is the obligation of Monticello when it comes to honoring that experience that that teacher brought. So it's not subject to the exemption, and it's not at all inconsistent with the statutes that we have. They can both be read with fidelity. And there's no reason to exclude her service just because it was provided in a district that would not have given her continuing contract in that setting. And I think it's very analogous to Long that this court already decided, where those teachers, the two teachers there, Ms. Long and Ms. Erickson, did not earn a continuing contract in their previous districts, yet the new district had to honor that experience when they were deciding, do you get a 1-year probationary period or a 3-year probationary period? And this court said explicitly that the statute does not add in additional words that require you to have also received a continuing contract in that previous district.
One of the things that the school district says is that charter schools, unlike other public schools, there have to be 3 evaluations throughout the year and written, I don't want to say places for improvement, but a plan for what you're going to do the next year to up your teaching game. And that charter schools don't have that same 3 times per year evaluation. And so a teacher who comes from a charter school hasn't gone through the same kind of evaluation that a teacher who comes from a public school.
Thank you, Your Honor. I have 2 responses to that. One is, this court has also said that there's no penalty for a non-chartered district who doesn't offer those 3 opportunities for evaluation. So for the district to presume that that is the case of everyone they get is inaccurate, right? They could very well be getting a teacher from another school district who did not receive those evaluations in their previous district.
But you would agree that a charter school isn't required to do the 3 evaluations per year of a teacher who's in their first 3 years of teaching at the charter school?
I would answer it this way, Your Honor. So there are two sections of the continuing contract law that address evaluation. One is in the probationary section, and that lists the three evaluations in subdivision 5. But then when you go later into subdivision 8, that's the teacher development and evaluation component. And that is the only part of the continuing contract law that the charter schools are responsible for completing. And it's specific in the continuing contract law, and it's specific in the charter school law. And that is, those they are evaluated regularly. And they are very...
But if the teacher isn't getting evaluated 3 times during the school year during their first 3 years of teaching, how is the purpose of the probationary period served if you interpret district to include a charter school as you're suggesting we should?
Your Honor, they are getting evaluated, and they're getting evaluated under the Teacher Development and Evaluation Act. And so,
but not consistent with Subdivision 5, correct?
Right, but for all practical purposes, it's an evaluation. It's an evaluation by a trained evaluator. It's an evaluation, just like Judge Riley said, where you are supposed to be given ways to improve if they notice things that you aren't doing right. It's required that you're disciplined if you're not following through. It's a very comprehensive plan, and this was a very large amendment to Minnesota statutes to improve teacher quality. So I would not in any way say that that's an inferior way of evaluating people. It's just a different way. It's just provided for in a different part of the statute. But there's no evidence in this record that would suggest that that type of evaluation is in any way subpar to what is listed in sub 5. I would say also add this, Your Honors, that when she came to the district, they had a whole year to evaluate her. And this court has published multiple decisions that say the purpose of that year is for the employer to evaluate the teacher, and they can decide. They had absolutely every right to non-renew her after that first year. So what we're here in front of you right now is to say they accepted her after that first year. They didn't exercise that opportunity. What they're trying to do is say, oh, we should be able to exercise our right after 3 years, and that's where we're running into a problem. And so I'm not suggesting that they would have to immediately give her a continuing contract upon hire. They still have that whole year to evaluate her quality.
Well, the continuing contract law makes that very clear, right?
Right.
You can have 3 years of prior service in a single district, but you still are a probationary employee for at least the first year.
That's right, Your Honor. That's right.
Then how do you read subdivision 5 and subdivision 7 together if your view is that district includes a charter school for purposes of subdivision 5, but a charter school is not subject to the continuing contract requirements of subdivision 7? Because both provisions refer to the term district.
So I think I'm understanding your question, Your Honor.
Yeah, I can clarify it. So subdivision 5 says the first 3 consecutive years of a teacher's first teaching experience in Minnesota in a single district is deemed to be a probationary period of employment.
Correct.
And for purposes of that subdivision, you're suggesting that the term district includes a charter school.
That's right.
But as I understand your argument, you're interpreting the term district differently in subdivision 7, which says a teacher who has completed a probationary period in any district, just says district, so same term, right? And who has not been discharged or advised of a refusal to renew the teacher's contract under subdivision 5 shall elect to have a continuing contract with such district. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I thought I understood you to say that district does not include a charter school for purposes of subdivision 7.
And that's because the Charter School Act itself says you're exempt from all rules unless we explicitly list it. So in the charter school rule, the charter school is subject only to pieces of subdivision 8. So that rule guides all of our interpretation.
But and subdivision 7 is talking about what a teacher gets, not what a charter school has to do. I mean, how is that any different than subdivision five? I guess that's where I'm struggling, so help me out in terms of the use of the word district.
For me, what helps me think it through is that it's what matters is your viewpoint. So if you're viewing it from what are my obligations as a charter school, my obligations are limited to what's under subdivision eight. If you're looking at it, what are my obligations as a non-charter district like Monticello, in number five, in subdivision five, you're required to honor the experience they bring, just like the teachers in Long. But in seven, there's no way that teacher would have any rights because they didn't have rights in the charter school. So they are, you're not getting any new rights as a charter school, but if you are Miss Lockroom in this case, you've fulfilled your probationary period, if this court agrees with our assertion that she has a one-year probationary period, then you get to number seven, and then because she is deemed to have fulfilled that probationary period, then she has the rights that attach in seven. But it's all related to the non-charter district because that's who's governed by this law.
Let me ask you this. I think you both would agree that there isn't, that this case is different from other cases because we have a charter school and we have a public district school.
Yes, Your Honor.
And so maybe it would be worth making this case precedential. And what would your syllabus point be? I'll ask you that also.
That's a good question, Your Honor. I think the in my mind, the syllabus point is that it's similar to Long, that if you come to a district having fulfilled the 3 years in a previous district, that is by virtue of the statute, by operation of law, you have a one-year probationary period.
So 124E.03 says, as you quoted earlier, a charter school is exempt from all statutes unless a statute or rule is made specifically applicable to the charter school or is included in this chapter. So when I was reviewing the various statutes, I didn't see that 122A.40 was made specifically applicable to a charter school.
That's right. Just the subdivision 8. So in letter H.
Right.
Yep. Right. Right. So the charter doesn't have obligations to the teacher, but the district that is covered by the continuing contract rules has to, in our view, needs to honor that experience that they bring. And I would also point out, Your Honors, that the statute also uses the word is deemed to have a probationary period. And you wouldn't need those words if it was automatic, right, that happened automatically. And Respondent is asking us to both insert language about charters and exclude language, omit language, about being deemed to have a probationary period. And I would also point out, when you look at the 123A55 that defines district, including special, common, and independent, that we've never had a concern about whether for example, South St. Paul is a special school district. The boundaries are the same as the district. If Ms. Lockroom had come to Monticello from a special school district, independent district, Monticello would not have, I can guarantee you, they would not have said to her, your experience doesn't count, right? So they're already.
Well, there's a special definition. The definition of district, district is defined in 128.05 as is special district, an independent district, and common district. It seems noticeably absent as any definition of charter district mm-hmm. in mm-hmm. there. Doesn't that affect your argument about why charter district service should be treated the same way as service in a special district or an independent district?
I guess I can't speak to the legislative, where they chose to put their definitions. They do define charter school in the Charter School Act, how you qualify for these specific exemptions and rules. And I guess I would just point out the inequities if they're changing the definition of a charter district in order to get funding, in order to amend the Constitution, right, then that definition needs to mean something. And I don't think that the plain language of the Act supports determining that it is a district for financial purposes, but it's not a district when it comes to the obligation of another school district when it's looking at tenure and probate or continuing contract.
But isn't that why, in fact, the very beginning of 124E.03 says it's exempt unless the other statutory provisions that apply particularly to a situation, whether it's probation requirements or whatever, that they have to bring the charter school in explicitly?
That's right when you're looking at the obligations of the charter school, but we're not asking you to require a charter school to do anything. Relator's asking you to require a non-charter school to honor the experience, right? That for every practical purposes is identical and equivalent and no reason to distinguish it. And the plain language of the Act also supports that, supports the interpretation. I would also point that this court has also said that when it comes to issues of tenure and continuing contract, that because of the public policy behind those concepts, that the laws be construed liberally in order to enforce those. And I think that is also consistent with. And I see my time is out. I'm sorry, I just saw my red light. I'll be back.
You'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Counsel?
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is John Edison, last name spelled E-D-I-S-O-N, appearing on behalf of the Respondent Independent School District 882 Monticello Public Schools. And, I mean, obviously this is a case about a pretty narrow issue of statutory interpretation, and I'll get into that in a second, but I want to start by talking about the discussion that took place during Ms. Korhaus's argument about evaluations. I feel like that's an important issue in this case when we're talking about whether service in a charter school should be honored by another independent school district such as Monticello Public Schools. And the reality is the evaluation process, it is not the same by statute. In 122A.40 subdivision 5A, probationary teachers in an independent school district need to be evaluated 3 times a year during each year of their probationary employment. Now, the question of, I understand that there has been a previous decision that is maybe a directory provision in the law, but to say that that is not happening is pure speculation. And I think we need to operate with the understanding that the law says what it says and that school districts should be following it. So when we talk about the evaluation process for charter schools, subdivision 8 of 122A.40, paragraph B, subparts 2 through 13, I believe it is, or 11, I think, has been made applicable to charter schools. And notably absent from that is part 1 of paragraph B, which talks about the evaluation process for probationary teachers. That does not apply to charter schools. And the part that does apply talks about a 3-year professional review cycle. So teachers in a charter school don't necessarily need to be evaluated every year. It's a 3-year cycle by operation of statute. And so, the record doesn't show how often Ms. Lockroom was evaluated during her time at the charter school.
What difference, I'm wondering what difference that makes. I mean, I think that Ms. Korhaus's argument about, what subdivision 5 of 122A.40 is focused on is on the current district, right? In this case, respondent district. What difference does it make whether during the 3 years, well, the 4 years in this case, that the relator was employed by the charter school district, what difference does it make how that evaluation process went when respondent district had a year in which to conduct its own evaluations along the way and make a decision by July of what would have been 2020 or about relator's employment status?
So, Your Honor, I'd respond to that question by saying that the 1 year probationary period that applies to someone that comes from one independent special or common school district to another, that assumes that teacher has already gone through the 3-year probationary period where the person has been evaluated 3 times a year and has gone through that rigorous evaluation process. That is not required to happen in charter schools. And so
Well, there's a different evaluation process. But again, in terms of Subdivision 5's focus being on the current district, and they've had their own opportunity, and we know there's some sort of evaluation that goes on, whether you've been at a charter school, another district, another open district, or common district, independent, all the different classifications. Again, I'm struggling to understand why we would read the statute the way you argue, as opposed to how a relator argues, and that is, look at the plain language. She wasn't a district before.
Yeah. Well, I'll respond to that in two ways. First, new teachers, probationary teachers, do show signs of, sometimes, they show signs of regression over the course of their probationary employment. And that's what happened. The district's position is that that's what happened with Ms. Lockerham in this case. In the third year of her probationary employment, she started to demonstrate performance issues, and that's why she was non-renewed. And so charter schools operate very differently than school districts do. And so, you know, essentially, I don't think there's the same opportunity in a charter school for those performance issues to be caught and addressed based on the way the statute is written as there is in an independent school district, which is why I assert that a school district such as Monticello Public Schools should have 3 years to evaluate the probationary employment of someone who comes from a charter school versus just one. Now, to your question, to your other point, Judge, about the plain language of the statute, I don't agree that we're applying the plain language of the statute in this case, because if we go back to the statute that relator is saying had changed the definition of school district in Minnesota, I don't think it's a model of clarity at all. I think it was very poorly drafted by the legislature. This court has already had one occasion to review and interpret that statute and had to get into the legislative history of the statute because the legislature used the phrase charter district in the statute, which doesn't appear anywhere else. And so—
Is 123A.55 even a definitional statute?
No, Your Honor, and that's one of the things I wanted to discuss today is that statute, chapter 123A does have a section in it that outlines definitions, and it defers back to section 128.05, which was already referenced this morning. 128.55 says nothing about definitions. It's a classification statute. It says that districts will be classified as independent, common, special, or charter districts. And then it goes on to talk about how charter districts are not the same as the other three types because they're not public corporations. And that was the issue addressed in the TIPCA case. I guess ultimately, and this is where the legislative history is important, when you look at the legislative history, I think it's pretty clear.
Well, let's back up. Do you think the statute's unambiguous so that we need to look at the legislative history? And if so, why?
I do think it's that ambiguous.
And you think it is ambiguous?
I do, yes. And I think it...
And let's just make sure, which statute are we talking about? Because we've been talking about a number of them here.
Well, so I would say, first of all, I guess this goes back to the definition, so I'll maybe start there if you can bear with me here. So if we're talking about district, as it's used in section 128.40, there is a definition for that. That's already been discussed. The definitions in chapter 120A are section 128.01 outlines the definitions, and it refers back to 128.05. In 128.05, subdivision 8, district is defined as a school district. Now, if you look at the terminology that's used in chapter 120A, I think it's pretty clear that there's a difference between a district and a charter school in that chapter. And we've cited examples for that in our brief. I'll give you one example. Section 120A.22, subdivision 7, talks about transfer of records when a student transfers from one school to another. And in that statute, that applies to school districts, charter schools, and private schools that receive public money. In the way that those three different types of schools are referenced, it's separate. There's a reference to district, there's a reference to charter school separately, and then there's a reference to the non-public schools. So
a relator would argue that's because it imposes an obligation on the charter school, and therefore the specific reference to the charter school is required by 124E.03 subdivision 1. Whereas relator argues that isn't required in 122A.40 subdivision 5 regarding the probationary period because it doesn't impose an obligation on the charter school. So can you respond to that argument?
Yes, Your Honor. I think there's some cherry picking going on there to put it somewhat informally. I think if you're going to argue that the definition of a district includes charter schools, then there is, anytime the word district is used, then it would apply to a charter school if that's what the definition is. And then to say that you have to add in on top of that specific references to charter schools when a particular statute would apply to charter schools because of that charter school exemption, that just, it doesn't make a lot of common sense for that to play out that way. And I think the area where I think that hits home is in the discussion that we already took place about the difference between, or how subdivision 7 of 122A.40 could be separate from subdivision 5A. And that's where, I don't see how you could say that a district includes a charter school for purposes of subdivision 5A, but then say that it doesn't for subdivision 7. I mean, logically, I don't see how you could say that a definition is one particular way for one subdivision of a statute. That doesn't make any sense. And so then when we get back to, you know, the statutory amendment in 2011 that created this whole issue in this case, I think it's quite clear from the TIPCA decision that if we even look at that particular statute, 123A.55, that it was not intended by the legislature to change the definition for school districts in Chapter 120A or universally across the education code. And I say that because the TIPCA decision itself talks about the purpose of that change in the law, and it was narrow to allow public school students attending charter schools to benefit from money that was in the public school fund. And you know, constitutionally, that can only be provided to school districts. So that was the issue that the legislature sought to address. And the bill title reflects that. So, you know, the House file and Senate file have the same title, and it confirms the narrow scope of that legislation. It was for the purpose of education finance, expanding the number of public school pupils covered by the fund. That's what it was for. And the audio from the March 14th, 2011 House Education Finance Committee hearing confirms that. That was what the author of the bill, Representative Garofalo, talked about. And there was a legislative staffer talking about the law, and that was the focus of the discussion. There were some questions asked about the broader impact of what was being discussed, and there were no clear answers to that, but also no clear statement of intent that what the legislature actually wanted to do was change the definition of school district across the education code. And continuing on with the legislative history, if you look at the session law from 2011 that contains this amendment, there's actually another definition of school district that was modified in that same session law. And that was in the definition of school district in section 126C.50. So in that same session law, the legislature changed the definition of school district for purposes of tax and aid anticipation borrowing and only included common, independent, and special school districts. It did not include charter schools. And I think that's notable as part of, you know, the overall package of what went through the legislature in 2011. And then finally, we mentioned in our briefing that there were attempts during the last legislative session to insert changes into subdivision 5A of section 122A.40 that would have included recognition of service and charter schools specifically along with other types of schools. And that didn't go through. So, you know, the fact that that was even proposed during the last legislative session is further support for the district's argument that at least for section 122A.40, the meaning of district does not include a charter school.
Not much happened last legislative session.
True. But, I mean, regardless of whether it went through or not, I mean, the fact that it was proposed, I think, supports the argument we're making.
So your view is that we should conclude that the term district is ambiguous as used in the probationary provision?
I think that, I do think that if you look at the definition in 128.05, which references district as a school district, I would say that is somewhat ambiguous, yes. And so then to define that, what I would say is if you look at the overall education code, I think that that does not include charter schools because throughout the education code, charter schools are referenced separately and they're afforded different treatment.
So what would your syllabus point be?
My syllabus point would be, I would have it narrowly tailored to the continuing contract law and have the question presented be whether a service in a charter school, excuse me, would be included as service in a single Minnesota district for purposes of interpreting section 122A.40 subdivision 5A. And the way that I would answer that question, hopefully, is no, that it doesn't. And I see that I'm out of my time, so thank you.
Thank you. Any rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you. Thank you, Your Honor. I did want to just jump in and point out a couple of places where this court has addressed the question you raised, Judge Bjorkman, about the focus on the one-year opportunity. This court, both in Emmanuel at 418, noted that this additional year of probation is to allow the new district an opportunity to evaluate the skills of the teacher before committing itself to a continuing contract. And then this court also heard the case in Mount Pleasure, and at page 884, similarly noted that, quote, a district could hire teachers from other districts safe in the knowledge that it would have a year to evaluate. In both opportunities, this court focused on that one-year opportunity and without any regard to what had happened in the past. Sorry to say I'm still a little bit confused about the respondents' focus on which statute is ambiguous, because in the briefing, and I didn't have a minute to grab the page, but they did say that it wasn't ambiguous. That was what I was prepared for them to be arguing, and I'm still not quite clear which statute they are saying is ambiguous, but I would just note that this court, again, in its decision in Long, cited to its earlier decision in Great River Energy versus Swedinsky, that noted that this court will not add words to a statute that the legislature either intentionally or inadvertently left out. So even if the consequence of that action to modify the statute to make constitutional changes had other fallout from it, that is what the legislature did. And this court looks at the language in front of it and opines, as you know, very well know, opines what that means. And if the legislature then wants to make other additional changes, it can. Although I think the argument that we're asserting certainly is consistent with public policy in a variety of ways. So I wouldn't anticipate legislative change, but obviously we can't predict what will happen across the street.
I asked Respondents' Counsel whether he believed that 123A.55 is a definitional provision. What's your answer to that question?
Your Honor, I guess I would say that whether you call it definitional or not, it has the impact of saying, for our purposes, that it's the most explicit explanation that we have about what is included as a district. The other definition says school district, right, which is undefined. I would also point out that the Minnesota Department of Education gives numbers to the entities that are considered school districts, and the charter school, the spectrum that Ms. Lockrum came from was given a number in the state system. I think it's 4607, but it certainly is considered to be one of the pieces of the public education system here in Minnesota. It just is subject to a subset of rules. And I would also...
They're not subject to the
exactly.
other statutes. And then we get back to my first question of the day. Where does 124E.03 subdivision 1 factor into your reading of the continuing contract statute?
And I would say that it, because on its face it says it doesn't. Right? And we're not asking you to interpret that. We're asking you to interpret 122A40. And I don't think you need to get into what the charter school obligations are. I think you can have a clean focus on what does 122A40 provide as obligations for respondent school district. And I would just challenge respondents' assertions that somehow because charter schools are, like you point out, Judge Bjorkman, are subject to many fewer laws, that somehow means that there would be staff there who were not, I think the quote was, there'd be fewer opportunities for problems to be caught, right? There's no evidence of that in the record, and I just think that should not factor into this assessment at all. The fact that they may operate differently doesn't say anything about how they're interacting with staff. And again, I point back to they had a year to evaluate her, and we're not at all address or suggesting that they would that would be limited in any way. And I would also, just one point, and I know we briefed this thoroughly, so I won't rehash this, but I just want to caution this court that I think you all very clearly know this, that to put any value onto what bill has been presented to the legislature is really risky. And the bill itself reiterated what we all understand are the obligations of the continuing contract law, addressed this issue that's in front of you today, and added in out-of-state people. So it was just a clear recitation. I see my time is up, so I'll stop there. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much. The case was well briefed and well argued, and we'll have our decision out within the 90 days.